Years ago, there was a jingle about the incredible edible something. I don't want to have to owe anyone money. Rocky made them infamous for a few months by downing half a dozen of them raw. I don't recommend that just for the gross factor. They are a staple for many people and the thing of anticipation or angst at hotel continental breakfasts. They are a top contender for Devil's Night hooligans and a key element in the so-named nog or the colonial drink flip mentioned by Karen Q in her recent podcast episode. I'm talking, of course, about the egg. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 75.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Surf over to my podcasts page, culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts, to find all the previous shows' links. From that podcast page, you can join my Eating Liberty Facebook group or follow the Culinary Libertarian on the various social media outlets by clicking on those respective tabs. You can support the Culinary Libertarian podcast by signing up for courses at either Liberty Classroom or McClanahan Academy, and they'll give you the history you didn't get at school. Liberty Classroom also offers courses on economics, logic, a course I've started and I love Dr. Casey's accent, as well as politics and history courses. Both programs offer lectures you can play in the car on your way to or from work or at home while preparing dinner. And all the courses from both programs are excellent supplementary content for your kids in middle school or high school. I'm filling in the gaps of my middle schooler with Liberty Classroom stuff every week. Both courses are linked with banners on the podcasts page, with also the banner for Kiko's Cakes. Easter and Mother's Day are on the way, and what a fine treat for the family for you to make a wonderful tart or tort or dessert following Kiko's video instructions. He's a good baker, and the recipes work. Click through the link on the banner to find out what you can make for Easter, which will get you the, oh, look at that, response. Lastly, give the show a rating and a review in your favorite podcatcher. That kind of engagement helps get the show more attention and grow the audience. It's a solo episode today, and I'm talking about eggs and egg cookery. But before we get to that, I want to make a clarification about the bottle deposit issue I mentioned in episode 72. In that very same neighborhood social media app I mentioned, I got a response from somebody who was telling me that the state does not get any of the money from the deposits in the bottle deposit redemption scheme. As it turns out, the distributor charges the store a dime deposit on each bottle, and the store charges that dime at checkout to the customer for each bottle can which has that deposit on it. The customer then gets back that dime by taking it to either a store or in Oregon, a bottle redemption facility. And so it's a closed loop. There's a private entity that manages all the affairs, but the bottle deposit is on the books as a state law. So while it is managed by a private firm, and the state doesn't get the money, it is a law, and therefore, the state does have enforcement power for noncompliance if a store refuses to participate. I cannot opt out of paying the deposit, So the principle remains the same, that the force of law compels me to participate. And if you thought of The Exorcist just then, it's not altogether an inappropriate consideration. All right, that squares that. On to eggs. Eggs. Les oeufs. One could almost do the Forrest Gump scene with eggs. You got scrambled eggs and fried eggs and sheared eggs and poached eggs and over easy eggs and 100-year-old eggs and raw eggs and, well, then there's the various sources of eggs from quail or duck or ostrich and, of course, chicken. Eggs are one of the go-to foods for the keto crowd and the most dreaded station for cooks on Sunday brunch is the omelet station. More about that later. Aside from a fine source of protein and the wide variety of ways to prepare them and being suitable for any meal, there are more to eggs than meets the eye. So first, some culture. Eggs, aside from being tasty, are also symbols of rebirth. Easter eggs, symbols of rebirth, and for many various Christian sects, the Easter egg symbolizes the resurrection of Jesus. Sometimes eggs are made hollow by poking holes in each end of the egg and blowing out the contents carefully, using the eggs for pancakes, a tradition before Shrove Tuesday, also known as Fat Tuesday, or for us Polacks, Bunchki Day. Eggs and animal protein is, or was, considered forbidden during Lent so the hollowed egg shell would be saved and colored, and that hollow egg would symbolize the tomb of Jesus after the resurrection. In our modern times, we have hollow chocolate eggs or those very yummy cream eggs. At Passover, celebrant Jews place a hard-boiled egg on the Seder plate. The tradition upon eating the egg is to dip it in salt water, and that salt water symbolizes the Jewish ancestral tears. There is a deep rabbit hole to follow about the various cultural uses of and for eggs, but that's another episode. My purpose is to get to food uses. So, first, some chemistry. Oh, stop groaning. There isn't a test. Well, actually, yes, there is. Eggs are said, rightly so, to be a good source of protein. One point sometimes overlooked is that the egg yolk also contains protein. The egg is obviously at least two parts, but really there's five we can talk about. The shell, the air pocket, the yolk, the white, and the chalaze, or the chalaze. And I don't really know how you say it. That's the little white snotty part. It's part of the white. It has a function. It's not the purpose of this show to talk about it. So aside from those five, the two main parts are the white and the yolk. The egg white is the albumin. The albumin contains a fair bit of water. There's a lot going on in the egg white, and we're not going to go way in the weeds on the chemistry here. There's like eight different kinds of protein, and they all have different functions. And you know, knowing that change how you cook them? Not a bit. So, if you want that, I'll give you a link in a minute, or there will be a link on the show notes page. I'll mention the book in a minute, but it isn't critical. Doesn't change how you cook the egg. So, one large egg contains 7 grams of complete protein, with 4 of those grams coming from the albumin and 3 of those grams coming from the yolk. And since the egg was designed to nourish the chick it becomes, that protein is about as good as it gets for life sustainability. The cookbook, the one I just mentioned, Understanding Food, offers that, quote, it has become the standard by which researchers rate all other foods, end quote. Whether or not that statement has any validity now, I don't know, but they said it did. And the link for that book, Understanding Food, will be on today's show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/75. If you're interested in a pretty deep dive into, well, food science, it has recipes, but really it's a culinary school textbook. So it might be a bit spendy, but it's a really good book. The high protein and low fat nature of the egg white gives the cook and baker some very fun ways to play with your food. The souffle or fluffier pancakes or chocolate mousse are a few examples of what can be made by adding an egg foam, which we know as the meringue. The fabulous, when done well, macarons or vacherin or floating islands are a few more ways egg whites can make lovely and light, tasty treats. The egg yolk, in addition to the protein I mentioned, has the fat, a good thing, and lecithin, which acts as an emulsifying agent. An emulsion is the mixing of two ingredients which normally wouldn't mix, oil and water. Creamy vinaigrettes. Vinegar is the water. The oil is the oil. Creamy vinaigrettes, not the cut kind, because there's something else happening there. Those are an emulsion. Sometimes the ratios of ingredients change, as in a mayonnaise or a hollandaise, but the fat or melted butter is held in suspension with the egg yolks, and so it's an emulsion. Lecithin is useful for creating emulsions in baked goods or less so in cooking. And if you read ingredient lists, oftentimes if there's lecithin, easy for me to say, it's going to be soy lecithin. Now, it functions the same, but I don't know anything about the soy part, and there's a lot of virtual noise about soy on the interwebs, but that is another show. So in the baking world, muffin batter is a very good example of how the egg yolk functions as an emulsifier. So when you're making your muffin batter, the buttermilk and the melted butter and the sugar are all mixed together. And when you add, so it's all globby because the melted butter is floating on the buttermilk and it's just kind of like a shredded mess. The egg mixed into that pulls everything together. And now it's this kind of silky, shiny, smooth mixture ready for the dry ingredients. Potashoe is another example of egg yolks pulling together a mix that may not want to play nice. Potashoe is that pastry that's made on the stovetop and turned into a variety of things, including eclairs or cream puffs or profiteroles or donuts, which we would know they call them tractor tires, but there's another name that crullers. There's a couple different recipes, but you can make crullers at home with potashoe or also gnocchi. Gnocchi. Of course, not potato gnocchi. There's at least three. The potashoe version, which I just talked about, which is very French. The semolina version, which most people don't see, and that's pretty southern Italian, Sicilian, or potato gnocchi, which is probably the one everybody knows about and the one you see in those very tragic containers on the shelf, far away from refrigeration in the grocery stores. Egg yolks contain cholesterol. There's been for some while a big push by the American Heart Association to avoid or at least reduce dietary cholesterol. I have spoken to two people in this very podcast who go against that recommendation and have support for their positions. Jimmy Clegg and Kama Monis are those guests, and I'll put links to their episodes on the show notes page. The research and information is changing rapidly and is, in some cases for cholesterol, reporting the exact opposite of what we've been told for so long. What's changing is the information about the tolerable levels of cholesterol in the blood and if dietary cholesterol actually does have an impact on the blood level of cholesterol. I won't decide for you what's best for you, but there is information to be found which is worth finding. Egg yolks are also an excellent source of vitamins, particularly the fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K, and eggs as a whole offer a few of the B vitamins. And eggs offer some micronutrients, including selenium, zinc, iodine, copper, and iron. Now, one of those eight proteins I mentioned kind of plays funny with the iron, which means that the iron is not available to the human body in digestion because it's bound up. However, that iron is available to the nose. When you overcook an egg, that iron and the little teeny bit of sulfur in the egg combine to make a foul, pun intended, odor that everybody recognizes as, oof, those are bad eggs. All right, on to some food. Whole eggs or yolks or whites can all be whipped to a degree to create a foam. Sugar can be added to that foam to make the base for a cake, or sugar in the form of a hot syrup can be added to that egg foam to make the base for a buttercream icing. Eggs also make the dreaded omelet. It is dreaded by the cook less for the cooking and more for the being part of the show part. Cooks are cooks because they like to hide. My frustration is that it is just fancy scrambled eggs with stuff. It is not an omelet. Egg cookery is a fickle beast, and what makes it even harder is the opinions of what is proper and not proper, which vary with the boss. I worked for a certified master chef who had a very strong opinion about what an omelet should be. The garnish, or the filling, is first cooked in a properly seasoned pan, not Teflon. Then the eggs are added to the pan, and within 30 seconds or less, that omelet must be cooked, shaped, placed, folded, and replaced onto the plate. And for Milos, that certified master chef, a wee bit of browning on the outside of the eggs. At another job, the chef made an omelet in a procedure that I didn't recognize at all, which included flipping the eggs like a pancake in a Teflon pan, adding the filling after the eggs were fully cooked, then folding the eggs into a shape and zero color. So, just because... because chefs can be, we can sometimes be cruel people. Yes, intentionally. Shh, don't tell anybody. So at cooking school, one of the tests in egg cookery, there was a whole module on egg cookery, they hated it, is to make an omelet. So you've already got a problem where that I'm the browned omelet guy, and the dean of the school is the not brown omelet guy, and we have very different procedures. So what is a student to do? Well, that's part of the fun of Egg Cookery Week, because there's a lot of different ways to get there. At home, do what you want. But read, I don't know what I want. It's okay. That comes. And you have to go cook. The way I was taught to make that omelet can make a giant mess at home if it's not done properly, and decorating the stove and the floor with eggs and garnish doesn't seem to be a good way to start the day. A frittata is also an egg dish, and my friend's flipped omelet thing was more a frittata to me than an omelet, but even at that, no, not really. A frittata is the cooked garnish first, then the eggs, but instead of three eggs, maybe nine. And stir that a bit in the pan on the heat, and then it's finished in the oven. After it's done, and done means that it is fully cooked, it's firm, there's no juicy wet bits, possibly under a broiler or in the professional kitchens, they're called salamanders, to give it a little bit of browning. And when it's done well and properly, that frittata will tip right out of the pan, and then you can cut it into wedges and serve that. Oh, when a frittata is done well, oh my goodness, it's just yum. Other ways to cook eggs. Fried eggs, which is to say pan-fried, brings the same level of preference. I care not at all for the brown bits on the bottom of a pan-fried egg, but some people really like that. Some people like a really almost like dark brown, crusty, chewy, crunchy bits. Yeah, no, not so much. A pan-fried egg, or over easy, or, well, over hard, but no, not really. That's a fine thing to have. But before I get into another kind of fried egg, let's take a moment out for a word from my sponsor. Hey, folks, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me tell you why. It's free. Free is good. They have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or your computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, CastBox, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with sponsors, just like this one, with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And if you use your phone, you can be podcast on the spot, getting news and interesting things, whatever appeals to you, wherever you are. Download the free app to your phone, or go to anchor.fm to get started creating your podcast today. You've listened to The World on Podcasts. Now go tell the world your story. Visit anchor.fm today to get started. Now let's get back into the show. A fried egg, as in deep fried, I'll let you visualize that for just a minute, is a challenge. Did you see a deep fire basket all covered with cooked egg guts? Did it make you squirm thinking about how the heck do you clean that mess? A deep fried egg is, in fact, deep fried, but not in the deep fryer. So, here's the procedure. Crack one egg into a small bowl, yolk intact, please. In a small pot, maybe 3 inches deep, filled at least 2/3 of the way with a proper frying oil, and to me, that means peanut oil or extra virgin olive oil. Yes, 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 I know. But the Italians do it for the Carciofi Giudea, and if they can do it, I can do it too. Or clarified butter. When the fat is to the proper heat, say 350 degrees, stir it with a wooden spoon slowly, just to make a whirlpool current, and then carefully place put the bowl over the fat and tip the egg into the fat in the middle of the pan, using your wooden spoon and maneuvering the egg around so that it is cooked on all sides and gets nice and brown. Now, this one's going to get brown because it's deep fried. How could it not get brown? One of the tricks here is you must use a wooden spoon. Metal and heat and that protein from the egg are going to stick. And it's maddening. Wooden spoon's probably going to stick too. So what you can do is hold your wooden spoon in the fat for a minute while it's hot, and you'll see some bubbles coming out. You may not know that there's water in the spoon, but the fat knows there's water in the spoon. So the water's coming out, and the fat's going in, and that's going to help prevent the spoon from sticking too much. It's probably going to stick. So have a chopstick handy, not plastic, not metal, to release the spoon from the egg. Don't use your fingers. Yes, that happened. No, not to me. Basically, it's like a poached egg, but it's in fat and not in water. It's a clever technique and none too quick. Production is slow since you can only do one at a time, or you make a mess in the fat, and we don't want that. Poached eggs, since we're going in this direction, are one of my all-time favorite ways to cook and eat eggs. At the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, we poached about 10 dozen eggs every Sunday for the Eggs Benedict on the menu, and everybody got two. Everybody who ordered them got two. So we had a trick. We used a very large, heavy-gauge pot pan and filled it with 4 or so inches of water, well-salted and vinegared, because vinegar and protein are going to respond in known and predictable ways. And what that is the vinegar is going to help the protein, the egg white, stay together. So if you've ever poached eggs and you got the water at the right temperature, 180 degrees is the right temperature, and you tip your egg into the hot water and the egg white went just swimming over the whole bottom of the pot. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at you. Well, vinegar is going to prevent the egg yolk from doing all that. And if you, it's possible to have too much, and what happens is your egg tastes like vinegar, and that's kind of yuck. So, I don't remember the ratios, maybe a couple, maybe an ounce per gallon, maybe a little bit more. So that's going to help hold the egg yolk in shape. It's also going to kind of cover up the egg. No, wrong word. It's going to hold the egg white into a shape. So it's a nice uniform blob of albumin, and it's also going to fold over the egg yolk a little bit to sort of protect it so that when the egg white is cooked, the egg yolk is still kind of nice and runny. And for those of you who think that's gross, cook it a little bit longer. For those of us who that's the reason to get a poached egg, well, that's kind of yum. So the whole thing, this big, big pot, and eggs start in the upper left-hand corner, drop, 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 keep making rows. By the time you get to the bottom right, the top lift is done. And so you just start lifting them out and putting them into the ice bath to stop the cooking. And then we had a procedure that was the prep, and then we had a process for service, and that's a whole other story. You don't need to make 10 dozen poached eggs at a time, probably two. But the procedure and the principle is the same. Properly seasoned, good salt water, a little bit of vinegar. You could use red wine because it would be fun. It would look kind of weird to be pink, but it doesn't change the taste too much. But anyway, that's silliness for Valentine's Day next year. There was a little hole-in-the-wall diner in the next town over when I was in high school. Mrs. Pete's Place. I'm told it is now closed, but she had her restaurant, at least on the weekends, open 24 hours. And when I was a bit more rambunctious and a whole lot more young, we would go there after the bars closed. Sorry, this is a bad example for you children. So we go there when the bars are closed and get breakfast. And on the menu, I only ever got the Mrs. Pete's special. Corned beef hash, hash brown potatoes, toast, and 2 eggs any style. Well, of course, you know, I'm going to tell you that I got them poached and mixed the hash browns and the poached eggs and the corned beef hash all together in this big mess. Spread it on those pieces of toast. Oh my God. I have tried for years to recreate that, and she had a thing. It was amazing. It was a fantastic, it was a joy to eat. If you shop for eggs at all, you may have noticed that there is at least 2 colors of shell and a wide variety of prices and maybe terms to describe the egg. Grade A or grade AA or medium or large or extra large or jumbo or something to that effect. The size relates to the size of the egg in a standardized system. For baking, my recipes, and pretty much most baking recipes, are built on using a large egg, which is 2 ounces apiece. Now, the extra large, the mediums, they're going to vary a little bit. It'll be a dozen of large eggs is 24 ounces. A dozen medium eggs, I think, is 21 ounces. A dozen extra large eggs might be 27 ounces. And if you're making muffins with one egg, 1/12 of 3 ounces is probably insignificant to the quality of your muffin. But if you are making a recipe that calls for 2 dozen eggs and you're using medium and not large, well, now you have a big difference in egg that needs to be there that isn't. Same thing goes the other way. If you're using extra large and now you have more liquid than you need, and your recipe is going to change. At home, for the amount of eggs we use in baking is so little, it's 1 or 2 usually per recipe, maybe 3. It doesn't really matter much, but just so you know, recipes are built on large eggs. The grating and the sizing are 2 different things. Grating is done by the USDA, and the only kind that you can buy in the store is A or AA. There is a grade B, but that's for commercial use, and if you see those containers of liquid eggs, that's probably a grade B egg that's been shelled and strained and mixed and put into a container and sold, because grade B eggs, they don't look good on the plate. They don't look good. Eggshell color is pretty, but meaningless. I've purchased eggs from a local person, and some of her chickens' eggs were just the most beautiful, pretty turquoise-ish blue. However, color aside, the quality of farm versus store eggs is another matter altogether and an important one. The price differences reflect some of that, but frankly, I can't personally justify $6 a dozen eggs. I do buy factory eggs for baking, and for my pancake batters or cookies and muffins, whatever I'm making, I use the white factory eggs for eating, scrambled eggs or an actual for real omelet. I buy a different egg at the store, but I'm getting an egg that I prefer to eat, and part of the preference is that the egg yolk looks better. Looks better means it has a nicer color. It sits nicer on top of the white when it's on the plate. And these are marks of the quality of the egg. The egg yolk coloring can be confusing because the factory eggs tend to be pretty pale as a yellow goes compared to, say, the organic, free-range eggs, the expensive eggs. Compare them, crack one of each of those onto a separate plate, look at the difference. Visually, you're going to say, wow, there's a big difference here. And that's where the price is, because the quality of that egg, it's a better egg than whatever happened at the factory farm place. However, the color is reflective, at least partly, to what the chicken ate. It might be something to do with the genetics of the bird. That's a question I don't have an answer to. And if somebody has one, well, that's great. Leave a comment on the blog or let us know. Let me know. But higher priced eggs are going to be a better quality eggs in general, as prices are reflective of the quality of the thing. A Maserati is a better car than a Pinto, pretty much on all counts, and the price is going to reflect quality. If you do that little experiment, look at how the egg yolk sits on top of the egg white on the raw egg on the plate. They may both be the same fresh, but probably not. A fresher egg, the egg yolk is almost, it's not, of course, hovering, but it's really sitting high on that egg white. And the egg white is really tight, and you may see almost kind of like 2 different stages. There'd be like a pick a pool of egg white around, and then this center, almost like a disc of the albumen. And then on top of that sits the egg yolk. And that factory egg, you're probably not going to see the same really pronounced disc of albumen. And I'm trying to create a visual image here, so my terminology is less important and less relevant to actual what's going on. But I want you to see that there's how the egg looks on the plate is an indication of its freshness. Another way to tell the freshness of the egg is the size of the air pocket inside. Every egg has an air pocket, but as the egg gets older, that egg pocket gets bigger because eggshells, it doesn't look like it, but they aren't impermeable. They are a little bit porous, and so there's some respiration going on, and the water, the moisture, H2O is coming out through those teeny, teeny pores and creating more of an air pocket. Now, before you get all grossed out about old eggs, it happens, are easier to peel in the form of hard-cooked eggs than fresh eggs. And no, vinegar doesn't help make that easier. If you've just yelled at your device and said, yes, it does, my grandma did that, and I do it. Well, I'm happy for your success, but I suggest something else is going on. However, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Since I brought it up, my procedure for hard-cooked eggs, since they aren't actually boiled, I put them in well-salted, cold water, sufficiently covered. What does that mean? I cover them by at least 2 inches of water over the top of the egg. Put that pot on the stove, put it on high, bring it up to a boil. As soon as it boils, turn the heat off and or, depending on if you're gas or electric, take the pan off of the burner, cover the pot, and set a timer for 18 minutes. Now, caveat, I've noticed at 5,000 feet, 16 to 17 minutes is just enough. 18 minutes closer to sea level. Let them sit covered in that pot for the duration. When the timer goes off, carefully pour the water out into the sink, leaving the eggs in the pan. Turn the cold water on to a slow trickle onto the eggs and fill the pot full of ice. And let that pot fill with and overflow with that slow trickle of water. Because that convection of water, the water going out is taking with it the heat. We want to make these hard-cooked eggs as cold as possible, as quickly as possible. And it's because that's going to stop the overcooking. That iron-sulfur mix we talked about, if you overcook your eggs and you see that little green stuff on the egg yolk, well, that's what's happened. It's Scotty. Change the laws of physics. That's a terrible James Doohan. I apologize. So that's why we're doing 18 minutes. If you cut into your egg and you say, you know what? I want mine a little bit more cooked than this. Change your time to 19. You can adjust it any way you want to. But now you've got your hard-cooked eggs for egg salad, for slice them nice and thin, putting them on like a nice piece of toast with some mayonnaise and good flaky sea salt and some black pepper. Oh, man, what a snack. Mm. After about 5 minutes, pick up one of those eggs and hold it in your hand and close your hand around it. Don't squeeze it, but just close your hand around it. You want to feel for any heat radiating out. Now, if it's hot to the touch, clearly it needs more time, but really pay attention. It may take 10 or 15 seconds, one, for the cold to go away and your hand to acclimate, and then to really see, is there something warm still coming out of the inside of that egg? If there is, back into the water with ye and let it get cold. Once they're done, then you're ready to go. Put them into a snap top container or a zip top bag or something where the transfer of air isn't really going to happen. Because even though they're cooked, there's still a microscopically porous shell and they can get kind of, I mean, if you wait 3 weeks, you get what you get. But the ease of peeling will change because the the inside part becomes harder to get out. Now, it's my contention, and I don't, people have said I'm wrong, that the salt serves two functions. One, it keeps the balance of sodium even, so the osmosis doesn't take place. So what would happen if you don't have salt? The sodium that's inside the egg is going to come out of the egg to create an equilibrium between in and out. Well, if you add the salt to the water, same thing like pasta or your veggies or anything else you're cooking, you've already got a sodium-rich solution so that the thing in the water doesn't have to surrender its own sodium to create a balance. That's why it's all the water, so that the sodium in the plant doesn't come out, and then it's like, this tastes like yuck. So we're avoiding the taste like yuck. I think that the sodium also functions as a way to make the egg peel more easily, but with the also added knowledge that the older egg is going to peel more easily than the fresh egg as a hard-cooked egg. Egg cookery is an art and a skill, and it's simplest. It's a transfer of energy from the pan to the egg, and you cook the egg. That's boring, but accurate. The craft is what makes the breakfast cook a highly specialized position, and breakfast cookery lingo is a whole different vocabulary. If you can't raise your own chickens, see if you can, or see if you can find somebody near you who does and make a deal. Maybe it's a deal for currency. Maybe it's a deal for something that you make from the eggs. I don't know. But finding fresh farm eggs, fresh from the chicken eggs, is mostly unknown to most people. And if you can find a source, I'm pretty sure you're going to be surprised by what you learn about how it looks and about how it tastes. And that is a thing worth finding. All right, folks, that's going to do it. Egg cookery is fickle is a right statement. There are loads of egg cookery books online, but not one of them seems to be concise. 300 ways to cook eggs. Well, no thanks. The reference book I mentioned will be on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/75, and at least gives you the science behind eggs and everything else. It's not overwhelming with recipes, but egg cookery is one of those very personal things, as demonstrated at least by pan-fried eggs and the omelet. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher, and come join me and the rest of us in the Eating Liberty Facebook group. Casey from the maple syrup episode has posted some pictures of sap gathering. I've no doubt we'll soon see maple sap boiling to syrup pretty soon. Technology is amazing, but it is not yet Wonka vision, so we can't taste it unless you live in Ohio. Hey folks, I just wanted to add here, I'd already recorded the bit about the sap being collected and the photos of that and the expectation that sap being boiled to syrup would be posted soon. Well, and how? So shortly after I recorded that, she put them up, and oh my gosh. I wish I could smell it through the screen. Of course I can't, but I remember what it does smell like, and that's kind of enough. But what a pretty sight to see that gorgeous maple syrup, and it's a family deal, so that's really cool too. So get over to Eating Liberty and sign up and check out the actual for reals, honest to goodness maple syrup. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.